Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 27 with Swedish breeder Ingrid Ragnarsson, who operates a small but successful show jumping breeding program in the north of Sweden. In this episode, we hear about Ingrid's background to sport horse breeding, and we discuss the recent win of her flagship homebred, Northern Light, who won the five-star Grand Prix in Langley with Tiffany Foster. Ingrid also discusses her appreciation for Tiffany's groom, who constantly keeps her up to date. Ingrid talks us through the path of Northern Light from foal to five-star winner. We discuss the use of older stallions versus younger stallions in her breeding program. We discuss some of the logistical challenges that Swedish breeders face when trying to access their desired stallions, but also some of the recent positive developments for Swedish breeders. As Ingrid is also a vet, I wanted to get her advice for young vets and aspiring young vets, as well as, of course, finishing the interview with her advice for young breeders. I think what will be quite helpful to several breeders that are listening in less central locations around the world is to hear that you are based quite northern in Sweden, and yet, despite the geographical constraints, we'll call it, you've still gone on to breed a number of successful international horses. Just last weekend, the now flagship horse for your breeding program, Northern Light, went and won the five-star Grand Prix in Langley and gave Tiffany Foster her first five-star Grand Prix win on home soil. Watching the videos, it looked like an incredibly special moment, because I think her mother was involved in doing the presentation, and it just looked like there was a lot of emotion around it. What was it like for you as the breeder of Northern Light?
Yeah, it was, as you say, it was really super, because it's a super combination, the two of them. So I know that Tiffany really loves that horse, and they've been competing in some other Grand Prix, but they never got a win. Yeah. And actually, it was, she has a Swedish groom, Caroline, who is always keeping me up to date with everything. And so when I woke up that Sunday morning, it was actually Mother's Day here in Sweden. Yeah. I woke up and I could see I had a lot of messages on WhatsApp from Caroline. So I said, okay, I'll have to look. And then they were so happy that she got the win. And me too. I was really, really happy that they made it all the way. That was really, they deserved it, really felt.
And I think what's really nice is sometimes at the top levels of the sport, there can be wins, and sometimes there's maybe a lack of emotion. But it was really nice to see kind of when it really, really means something to somebody.
Yeah, to the rider and everybody around them. I know that. It's always, when you sell a horse, I mean, of course, you want the horse to be successful and everything, but it gives an extra warmth when you know that the horse is being really well looked after, and well, that she's loved, and not just for being a competition horse, but for being a horse and allowed to be a horse too. So I think that gives everything an extra great feeling, I think.
Yeah, and just in interviews, I think the way that she talks about her horses and this horse is, you can tell, I think she really cares about them.
And yeah, she does. And it's an honest, she's honest about it. I have the good luck of meeting her at the World Championship in Herning. Mm-hmm. We met up because she was there competing, so we met up for the first time. I'd never met Tiffany before, but she, no, it was really a happy meeting with Caroline Groom and everybody around, the whole team. It was even if Nora the horse was not there, it was really nice to meet them. And they're really looking after the horses. I'm really happy about that.
And I think what's particularly nice is often the breeder is completely out of the loop. Like they're the forgotten part. When a horse is winning, the rider or the team are not thinking about the breeder in Sweden or wherever, whatever country they're in. But it's
Yeah.
nice that they're keeping you so up to date. But I think what's also really nice, and it's a little bit unusual for a five-star rider, when you go onto Tiffany's website and you look through each of the horses in her team, it lists the breeding, and that's positive to see, but it names the breeder of every single horse. And that
Yeah,
really surprised me.
I never thought about that, but because it's like I say, it's especially if the horse goes over here from Europe to the other side of the Atlantic, it's very easy to lose them. Very often they change their names, and that's another thing that I'm really, really grateful because she was called Northern Complot. When she was here in Europe, and then she was sold, and I was, oh no, now she's gonna change her name, but Caroline told me that it was actually Tiffany who said that we have to keep Northern. And I don't know if she knew that that was my kind of basic name. I name
Yeah,
all my
your
horses
prefix,
something with
yeah.
Northern. Yeah. So she was named Northern Light instead. So that way she kept the Northern name, which makes me really, really happy. That was really thoughtful, I think.
Yeah, and I think there's a few little things there that's very telling of her and her team, I think, and it's really, really nice to hear. But you already had a Northern Light in your life before this.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. Yeah, my very first foal, and that was in she was born 1998, and was by Lucky Light, so I named her Northern Light.
Yeah.
And then, well, in that way, I said, well, I have to have some kind. A lot of people have like their initials in the end, and just to kind of have a read through everything. So I thought, well, okay, I'm here in the north of Sweden trying to breed some horses. Okay, I'll call myself Northern Jumping, and then I'll use Northern.
Yeah.
So she was, and the funny thing is we called her Nora,
As well.
like funny. So it's the circle has been closed.
That's incredible.
Whoever's, yeah.
Can you give me a bit of background information on how you first got involved with breeding?
I'm actually born in Skåne in the south of Sweden, and I was brought up on a dairy farm, and I had a father who was really into breeding Holstein cows. We had some warm blood and Shetland pony at the farm too, and he was really into breeding ducks and hens for showing and stuff. So it was a lot of that kind of animal. So I think I got the interest in breeding. I think I got that from dad. But then I just rode for pleasure my whole time growing up. And then once I started at school and everything, I didn't have time for horses. But when I settled down here, I wanted a horse for pleasure riding. And then I thought, well, I might as well get a mare in case I want to breed. And then in 97, I had my first child, and I thought, well, I'm into breeding. I might as well put the mare into breeding. So that's when I inseminated her with Lucky Light, and I got my first foal. So that's when it started. And then I got some more Swedish mares after a while, but then in 2005, I kind of got to a level when I wanted to do something different. So I quit my job at the veterinary clinic I worked, and I started my own business just to work more with just farm animals and horses in reproduction at the stud. And then I decided, well, if I'm going to breed, I have to get good mares. I have to do it proper. I have to really get good mares. So that's when I kind of took a change of way and changed my breeding mares, so to speak. So that's
And
when I got my first German mare,
that's
actually.
exactly what I was going to ask. There's a strong German influence throughout your breeding program, and I wondered how that came about.
And that was really by coincidence. When I decided to get some new mares, I started looking around, and then I found an interesting bloodline. I thought that sounded good, was good damn line, and I went to look at her in Germany, and it turned out she was sold by Carlotto and Bonnie Jasmine Jacobs in Beerbergen. They are the breeders of Embassy and Perigueux and yeah, heaps of big. So they were really big. I didn't know that then, but I found out that they're really big Hanoverian breeders. And I bought this Carola, and I looked at one of her daughters, a 3-year-old by Embassy, and that I wanted to buy too, but they wouldn't sell her. She was just pregnant because she had a hoof bone fracture, so they were hoping she would go back, could go to sport. And she was pregnant with Staccato, which was a stallion I really liked and really wanted something from, but they wouldn't sell her, so I bought another one. So that's really how it started. And Carola, this it was a Calypso 2 mare, that she was Carlotto and Bonnie had their horses at the place owned by the Engelke family, Fritz and Monica, that had turned a pig farm into a big breeding place. Really, really nice for brood mares and 1, 2, and 3 year olds. And they have an active stable. I liked it when they could go out in the big fields and really not just be installed. What do you call it? So, and then I kept since then, so it's more than 15 years now, I've had one or two or three horses at their place still. Sometimes because, well, actually, the year after I got to buy this Embassy mare because she got arthrosis from the fracture, so she couldn't go into sport. So they would sold her to me, and that's really the best brood mare I've had. She's now unfortunately dead since last year, but she turned 20 last year, and that's where I've gotten most of my really good horses from. Yves Lafleur was her name. The first offspring she had before I bought her was Stacco, a stallion by Staccato, who was sold to René Tebel, and he was approved and jumped 145 before he was sold, I think. And then I got five more out of Staccato, and they've all turned out really, really good. One is in Mexico, jumping 145. Skyfall is now sold to the US to a young junior rider there. I think she's a pupil of Laura Kraut. He jumps 150. And yeah, Euphoria, we talked about in the program. That's another Staccato Embassy. So that was really a good combination. And then, yeah, so that was a really good mare. So that's really the foundation of that dam line, really, for me.
And with the mares that you left in Germany, was the motivation to just make it more accessible to access stallions than it is in the north of Sweden?
Yeah, partly. Eve, I really left because she needed to be in that kind of environment where she could walk around all the time. Here in the north, we take them in at night, and then it's a little bit harder to have them outdoors all the time, which she couldn't do in Germany, and that was better for her foot. So that's really why she never left that place, actually. I kept her there, and so partly sometimes because I wanted a special stallion, but sometimes just because it was more practical. So, and some of the young ones I kept until they were 2, 3, and then I brought them home. But I sell a lot of foals, and mostly I sell all my colts. I usually sell. Find it hard to keep stallions at least at home, so they usually sold.
And when you made this change in your breeding program to buy into better mares or more proven lines, had you a clear goal on what you wanted to breed, or like had was there a clear plan?
I think yes, the plan was really to, as I said, not only get better mares, but get better offspring. Really try to breed really good horses. Use good stallions on these good mares. So I wanted to improve it all to really try to. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to try to do it really good. That's what. Then you never know whether it works out or not, but that was the plan. So, and then I bought the year after, I also found Sema Cherie, who was a contender mare. That is the mother of
Northern Light.
Complot and Plotin. Yeah. So that was another German trip.
And can you tell me about her as an individual? Because that's something I really like to see or to hear about the mothers of these great horses. Like what was she like as an individual, or what was it about her that made you buy her? I know she came from a very good family, and some of the mares in her line had competed at the top of the sport, but can you tell me about her as an individual or as a character?
Yeah, why a picture was, as you say, the dam line with Corrada and stuff. That was it. But as a, she was a really lovely horse, and that comes through. She had a lovely character. She was really, really sweet, but she was also very sensitive in the way that. Well, I like horses sensitive, not in the way that they are. Sensitive, easily scared, but they have to be reactive. That's what I mean with sensitive. They have to have quick reactions and be alert and hear and see stuff. I mean, then if you're gonna have a reaction on the competition, you need to have a horse that when the obstacle is there, they have to find it quick. And that was what she was like. She was really always very awake, or what you're saying, but still had that lovely character, which has come through to all her offsprings, that they are very sweet horses and usually easy to ride, and but and more sensitive than they look. They can look really relaxed, but they are really sensitive to what's on their back, if you know
Was
what I
that,
mean.
yeah, no, I do. And what I'm curious is that something that you had come to seek out from observation of other horses yourself? Or was that something that you had learned from, say, breeders from previous generations to look for those characteristics in a mare?
I just think that was my feeling, because sometimes it can be really hard to see that kind of just. It's not necessary that the mare, the dam, has shows that characteristic, like Carola and Eve. You couldn't really see that in the way they were. Carola was really, well, slow going, or a big mare, but. They gave it to their offspring, and especially with Eve. Eve, she really passes that on, and her combination with Staccato, I really, really got that kind of the. It's not explosiveness, but it's close. I usually call them Ferraris
Yeah,
because
the
they're. You have to be
reactive.
real, yeah,
Yeah.
reactive. You have to be really light on the gas, but they do what you want to do.
Yeah. With Northern Light herself, can you talk to me about her as a foal and then talk through her path to becoming the 5-star Grand Prix winner that she became last weekend? Do you
Yeah,
remember her clearly as a foal?
we do. She's born here in at the farm, and I remember she was quite big, and the mare has to and Cherie had to struggle a bit, so I had to pull her out, help her pull her out, and my daughter, who was not so old at that time, was also with us, and so we when she came out and we just saw this. A lot of white in the face and white on the legs, and she was just laying there all wet. And we saw, oh, it's a mare. We were just, oh, it's a mare from Plot Blue. We were so
Yeah.
happy. And she was all the time. The plan was to keep her Like my daughter said, oh, this is my horse. And that was the plan, really, that he was supposed to be. And to be the successor of Turin, the breeding, that was really the plan. Absolutely. And she was, I actually, she was really well developed as a 2-year-old. So I actually inseminated her as a 2-year-old. That's the only one I've done that with Emerald. And she got a really, really nice colt that unfortunately died before he was weaned. But that was a really, really stunning foal. So she's had a foal. Then she was 3, and I sent her to a friend in the middle of Sweden that has helped me a lot with breaking in young horses and so on. So she took her when she was 3, broke her in, and she was very easy, nothing strange about that. And then she was home again for, I like to give them long breaks between being broken in, and then they can have the whole summer and autumn just relaxing and not doing much. And then I sent her to down to Skåne to Flyinge. They have used the school, the pupils in the education, they break in and jump in the horses. So she was there to be jumped in, started jumping at that school. So she's had a kind of a very mixed and relaxed education with, because as I said, the plan was to keep her, and we just liked her to, yeah, do the things she should. And since she was in Skåne, the Carl Walter Fox took her as a 5-year-old. I said, well, she has to start to do some competition if he wanted to ride her. So he took her, and they went to Falsterbo to the 5-year-old final, and they went to the Young Horse World Championship in Laeken as a 5-year-old. And then after that, we brought her back up here to the north for Uni to start riding her. And it was then 15, I think. So, and then as a 6-year-old, Uni competed her and qualified her for the Breeders' Trophy in Skåne. So I said, well, if you qualify her, you can go down and ride the finals if you like. It's a 2-day trip, but and to that was almost didn't happen, because just a few days, the plan was to fly Uni down to Skåne because she didn't have a driver's license. So a friend of mine came up from Skåne to help me drive the horse down. But then a few days before we were going for the show, my hip broke down, so I had to go to hospital. I have a hip replacement urgently. So my friend took the horse and drove by herself all the way down. So I had to look, was in the hospital bed looking at Uni on the computer competing the horse. And she did really well. They were clear all around. And she called me the first day, Mom, they want to buy the horse. What do I do? I said that, well, I was kind of high on morphine, so I said okay, I'll put a very big price. Nobody's going to buy her at that price. I said, okay, if they pay that, then we'll sell her. And they did. So that's when she was actually sold. So it was with the aching in the heart, it was really for both me and especially for Renee, I think it was. But at the same time, you. I mean, I have 2 more kids that are not into horse. We have a house and farm, and yeah, you need the money.
Reality,
So yeah. And like I like the saying, an old man used to say that the money doesn't get lame.
I've never heard that one before, but
Yeah, I think that's very good.
And at that
Yeah,
point
so.
then, was it the Philiparts that bought her at that point, or was it the Fredrickson's? Did both of them
Together.
put together?
Yeah, they put it in together. So they bought them together, but she went down to the Philippines. So both Anthony rode her in, I think it was the European Championship for juniors or something like that.
I think
And
so.
then Olivier rode her at the 7-year-old in Lanaken. And I was happy to be there too. Actually, I went down just to see if just to see her and everything. And she was placed seventh, so I was really, really happy.
From there, how long was it from, say, from that point until Tiffany came into the picture?
Let's see. He rode when she was seven. Maybe she was nine when
Okay.
Tiffany bought her. Something like that. So let's see. 1 or 2 more years. Yeah, I think she was nine. She's 12 now. Yeah.
And it was interesting. I read somewhere, maybe in a few places, that initially, I think when they called Eric Lamaze about the horse or sent the videos about the horse.
He wasn't interested.
Yeah, you might tell that part for anyone who hasn't seen or heard it, because I think considering how the whole thing turned out and even how things developed so positively so quickly, it just shows that there's a horse for a rider.
Yeah, that's what I think too, because it's like I said, I've read that too, that Eric Lamaze was not interested in her, but Olivier, he was the one who wanted to buy her in when they bought her. He's the one who really kind of saw, I think, her potential. I don't think his father was as keen as he was really. He thought she was too expensive. But Olivier, as I understand it, he put her on the truck anyway when he went to Eric Lamaze. So that was good. That was good because they're really a match in heaven. I think Nora O'Plotten, we call her O'Plotten, she's kind of a lady's horse. You can see it almost when Tiffany's riding her. She's almost having long reins, and it's very, very soft riding, and that's really what suits the horse so well, to not be controlled and too much frame. I think she does her best when, well, they kind of go together. I don't know if it makes sense, but that she's not too much in a frame and put in place. You can see they have a really flow in their riding, and that's when she does the best. And the horse has never been flashy. It's like I have to admit, I thought when I saw the course on the final in Lanaken when she was seven, there
That's
was a
crazy. That's huge.
yeah, there was like and there was a, what do you call it, the three combination with three obstacles.
The triple
And it
combination,
was
yeah.
so big. And I thought, oh God, no, she's never going to get over that. She's never jumped the 150. She's never going to jump that. And then she just, everybody had a problem with that one too. So, oh God, I thought this is not going to end well. But she has a way of just doing that little extra when she needs to. She doesn't jump big and flashy and half a meter over the obstacles all the time. She just knows where to go. And she just turned
She's
another
clever.
gear in, and then she just flew over that like nothing. So that's what first time really I thought that, oh shit, this, sorry, oh my, this horse has something extra. She's better than I actually thought she was. So that was really nice.
Is there a reason, the fact that you owned her until she was six, and also the original plan had been that she was going to be the replacement for her mother, and that you covered her at two and let her carry the foal. Was there a reason why you never tried to get an embryo from her or to take another foal from her in the next few years?
Well, that I didn't do it before she was six is because I thought I was gonna keep her. I tried to get it into the deal with Philip Hertz and them that I should be able to take an embryo, but that they wouldn't let me do because they thought Ludo said that his opinion is that it takes too much out of the mare. That was what he said. So I tried to do that, but didn't succeed. So that was a little bit sad.
You'll just have to talk to Tiffany again.
Yeah, I will do that. But I've been lucky enough to, because I didn't have any mares left of that line. But one of the ladies that I sold one of the sisters to, an Emerald sister, she was kind enough to last, well, it's 2021, let me borrow this Emerald mare and get some embryos from
That's
her.
super.
And that's where I now have two offspring this year, and I have some more embryos in the freezer. So I hope I'll get filly out of that I can continue the dam line. I tried to buy the horse, the Emerald Mare, but they wanted to keep her, so I have to do with the embryos.
Roughly, actually, we didn't touch on it at the beginning. Roughly, how many foals would you have at home in the average year?
I'm a small breeder, so between one and three, four maybe some year, but usually one to three. So I'm a small breeder.
And then, is that including what in Germany then? How
Yeah,
many, or is
that
that
would be.
including them?
The plan was to get four this year, but it turned out that one lost it early and the second one lost it during the winter. So I'm getting two out of four this year.
With you covering Northern Light as a 2-year-old, did you say that's the only time that you've done that, covering a 2-year-old?
Yeah, it is actually. Because, well, most of them, I think, is not really ready to be covered to carry them themselves. I don't really do that. But I would do it again if I once again had a mare that I thought was really physically ready for it. Then I don't have any really moral thoughts about it like that. But far from everybody is ready.
And say with the embryo transfer, is that something as a vet, is that something that you're able to do yourself? Do you do all the embryo transfer work at home?
No. I could if I wanted to, but the problem in Sweden is really to have enough recipients mares, because it's so expensive to keep horses during the winter, and up here it would be just about impossible. So it's really tough for everybody in the south of Sweden too that does embryo transfer to have enough mares. That's the big problem, and we have. Which I think is good, animal welfare laws that kind of stops keeping mares just like in a more or less fabric way to just yeah. So that's a kind of an obstacle, if you want to call it that. No, so I don't do that myself.
I think you mentioned it earlier in the interview, and even from looking online, looking at the stallions that you've been using, you seem to always go for the older, more proven stallions. Is that coincidence or is that deliberate?
I think it's deliberate, because I've been, even if I know my dam line well, I still think I have so few mares to breed, and it's easier to know what you get, or at least getting easier to get a chance to know what you get if you have a proven stallion too. But I actually once I've used a young stallion, see, it was
Yeah, Diamond Duravel.
Diamante Revel,
Or
yeah,
Diamond,
Diamante Revel, yeah, and that's on Carola, the German mare that I knew very well, and I liked his pedigree and his dam line, and I thought, well, I'll be wild and crazy, and I'll try a young stallion, and that turned out to be her best offspring. He is jumping. He's actually also has a, but it's a 3-star Grand Prix victory in Mexico. He's with in Mexico, so and so
And he's
he's doing
jumped
really
five-star
well.
Grand Prix as well.
Sorry.
That he's already jumped five-star Grand Prix as well.
Yeah.
Level as well.
Yeah. He
So
said.
it's
Yeah. So
excellent.
he's doing really well. So that's so maybe I should be a little bit more courageous, taking
Well,
him with
and
me.
especially I suppose with your background and with your dad and his interest in the breeding and the Holsteins and the different animals, I'm surprised that's not creeping in more.
Yeah, it could. I think it's. I get the feeling it's harder and harder to choose stallions, because there are so many of them, and they all have the really good lines, all of them. But you have to be really picky with the dam line. So I've been looking at young ones. I have, absolutely. But yeah, I think I've taken the safe turn a little bit. But now, as I'm getting older, maybe I should start doing it the other way around.
Yeah, and I think maybe as the breeding program gets more profile and with the success of Northern Light, I hope that it'll bring maybe even more interest, more international interest, and maybe it gives you the freedom to maybe sometimes breed in the way that you want to rather than breed in the way that you think you should. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. At the same time, I never choose a stallion that I don't choose him because he's the stallion of the day, so to speak, because he's the most, if he doesn't fit my mare, if that's still my first goal, to find the stallion that I think really will would bring me what I want from my mare. Absolutely. But yes, absolutely, I agree.
Out of curiosity, if it was a thing that you didn't have to sell any foals or sell the colts, and if you were in a position where you had the riders and you could produce them all and you could breed to whatever stallions that you wanted, are there two or three young stallions that you've been really watching, we'll say under 10, that you've been really watching around the world that you think you'd really like to breed to at some point?
Yeah, can I look at my list?
You can.
I'm hopeless with name
No problem.
because I have a big list that I always put down when I see interesting things. I usually put them down. Also, I have a big stallion list, but I never get down to the. So I'll check. But I'm not sure about the age of the ones.
That's okay.
I like Paneca, Paneca de Calvari.
Calvary.
Comilfosan, yeah, and he has a super dam line, so that's one that I've been really thinking about. I haven't really had a mare that I really thought fit him yet, but that's really somebody that I like. I like Escape, but he's not so young anymore. He's also up. They tend to get up on the circuit when I'm thinking about them. There's another Comilfo has some really nice sons, I think. The Pegase van de Ruyterhof is also a nice son, I think. Yeah, and then I like the Untouchable Blood. United Touch is. I'm not sure how old he is. So, yeah, it's a long list. I
Well,
should have more mares. Yeah.
that's the problem with us as breeders, is we start making a short list and it
Yeah.
gets longer and longer and longer.
Yeah, and
And
then you
then
lack the mares.
Or then when you go to cover, you can't get the semen, or the courier
Yeah,
loses it, or he's not
yeah.
available chilled. On a different note, either through your veterinary profession or as a breeder or through your involvement in the sport horse industry, is there anyone that has really inspired or motivated you, or someone that you've really learned a lot from that's made a big impact on your life in the horse industry?
Yeah, I have a colleague, and she went to vet school a few years before me. Lena Nyström. She breeds dressage horses very successfully. She's really successful, and she's an inspiration, absolutely, because she's bred so many really, really top-class horses. So, and she's always the nicest to talk to, and you can always call her if you have a problem or if you have an idea or if you need a box for a mare who's going to Denmark for a night, you can always call her. So she's super. And then there's other horse breeders like Eva Gudmundsson, who's the biggest show jumping breeder in Sweden. She's also always very good to discuss with and talk and have interesting ideas with. So yeah, that's a few. And of course, Jakobs in Germany is super breeders. I mean, it's just to look at all the horses they've produced. The Germans taught me really to the importance of dam lines. That's not really, I hadn't experienced that it was something you talked much about in Sweden. You just discussed the stallions and everything. I mean, okay, we have our numbered dam
Damn
lines
lines, yes.
that we have, but no, yeah, but not in that way. The importance that the Germans took in that was almost all they talked about was the mares and the dam line. So that really changed my way of looking at it when I got in touch with them. Absolutely.
Is there a good network in Sweden amongst the breeders? Like, are breeders just operating a lot by themselves, or are breeders good to support one another and share ideas and come together?
It's been improving the last couple of years, actually, through the SVB organization. They've had different kind of constellations with meetings over the internet, where Eva Gudmundsson, as I said, she was the moderator, so to speak, and then when they got together groups of breeders, and we would sit and discuss different topics that everybody wants to know, not only stallions, but how do we market how do we sell them, how do we reach the international market, and a lot of stuff like that. And we had like four or five internet meetings, and then meet at the Breeders' Trophy, the equestrian week in the south. So that was a really good initiative, I think, to get us, because it tends to be otherwise that everybody's sitting in their own little cottage and trying to do their best. And Sweden being such a big country, it's the distances are immense. So that was really, really good. This is also an effect of the pandemic that you start to use the internet a lot more.
No, it's good. And I guess the fact that those connections have been made, then hopefully people will keep some of those connections even outside of organized events. And yeah, hopefully it'll lead to
Because once you've
positive
talked to
developments.
somebody or you met over the internet like this and talk and discuss, then you feel more, it's easier to take contact and say, pick up the phone or go and say hi to them and talk to them at an event or anything. It's like you've got that first contact with them. So absolutely, I think that's been really good.
And you can answer this either as a vet or a breeder again. But if you had a magic wand, is there a problem that, say, in the warm blood industry in Sweden that you think needs addressing or fixing? Or is there something that the industry is struggling with that you would love to be able to just magically fix or help?
No, really, well, we have a problem within the breeding in Sweden, and that's the really, but that's more of a logistic problem that we have really problems with the shipping of semen, fresh semen, because, well, everybody is struggling with the finances and stuff, so the postal organization has cut down on delivery, so you just get the mail every second day, and they don't ship on Saturdays and everything. And the breeders in the south has been really trying to organize everything with a special transport that goes around, driving around with the semen. It's like going back to the 18th century, really, instead of just sending it like it used to be. It was really easy. I just went to the post office and picked up my box, and then I went home and inseminated. So it used to be really nice, but that's the problem with the. I think it's a lot of things like that in society that they cut down on the services that you've been used to having, and that affects the breeding quite a bit, which of course it can force you into using frozen semen. You can use that, but it's more expensive for the breeder, and not all mares are happy with frozen semen and get results from that. And in the warm blood industry, compared to the trotters, you always get a lot of straws for frozen. It's like seven, eight straws, and you get for three heats at the same time. So you have a lot to work with. You get, if you're lucky, you get a whole straw for warm blood. So that's another problem. I would like it to be more generous with the frozen semen, not just one pity straw.
Yeah, that is a
But
shame to hear because you're already cut off a little bit from mainland Europe, and to hear that the postal service now is being cut down, it is going to make that a lot more difficult for people to breed to the stallions that they really feel suit their
that I
mare.
want, and then you, because it cuts down the what you can choose from. I mean, then okay, well, I can get something else. It's not as good as I wanted, because there's, but of course, that's it's still good stallions. There's a lot of good stallions, but if you want really that top notch that you want for your mare, it's a lot harder. It is actually so.
Question I finish each interview with is, what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone at the start of their breeding program? But I first want to ask you a little different twist on that. And it's to any young vets or to any aspiring vets that are listening, because there's lots of them in Ireland that are interested in breeding and will be listening to interviews like this. So if young vets or aspiring vets were coming to you asking for advice on going into veterinary as a profession, what advice would you give to them?
I would tell them to start out working in as a country vet, as a working in a mixed practice. If they want to focus mainly on horses, pick one with a lot of horses, but don't get too narrow too soon. I think that if you kind of learn broadly and see the whole picture in a bigger way, that helps you once to become that specialist and just focus on one area. I think so. Take the opportunity to widen your horizon first, and then you can always narrow it down and become that really special specialist. I think that's what I would say.
Super.
Come to the countryside.
And then for the young breeder or for the person that's new to breeding, what advice would you offer to that person? Or if you were starting all over again, how would you advise yourself?
Well, that would absolutely be really picky on your mares, what you choose. Make sure that you have good mares with good dam lines. Don't lower yourself on that. Really ask yourself, is this mare good enough for breeding? Because I wish I had done that 10 years before I did, that I started at a higher level. Takes me so if you can start higher up, the easier it is for you to continue to go up. And then we have a saying in Sweden that the children tend to have ears like pot lids. The lids you put on pots, they have big ears. They hear everything they should and shouldn't. So I would say that have big ears. Listen to other breeders, listen to riders, and listen to trainers, because a lot of people have a lot of experience in, and you need that kind of mix from all the fields to know what to produce to those who want it, really. So have big ears and use good mares.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?